Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 2015 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here in Little Rock. I'm Phil Marriage, your host, and I'm really glad you guys can join us this afternoon for a program I think you'll probably enjoy as you get into it. And that topic today is meditation. And there's some other words using that word to describe the program of meditation. If you'd like to listen to the longer version of the program, you can catch it at our website at yttshow.org or on kuar.org. You can just click on the links there. It'll take you right to the longer version of the program. And many of our past programs are there, too. George Crook is my guest here today in the studio, and he has been a practicing meditator for over 30 years in a variety of traditions and settings, and he's been teaching meditation formally and informally for the last 15 years. George is also a level 2 practitioner of Hakomi, which is a body-centered, mindfulness-based practice, and George holds a master's degree in clinical psychology from the Fielding Institute and is licensed as a psychological examiner in Arkansas. And he's also the former president of the Ecumenical Buddhist Society here in Little Rock, and we'll get into several different aspects about that. But George Crook, welcome to the program today.
Phil, thank you for having me here.
George, I'd like to begin with a little bit of my understanding of the word meditation. My dad was a pastor all the time I was growing up, and he used the word meditation. It mainly had to do with a religious connection. But as I've myself studied about meditation over the years, realize that there's a whole lot more to it than just the religious connection. I'd like for you, if you can, to open up the discussion with our listeners about some of the earlier understandings people might have, say some of the older people might have of the word meditation, and then kind of move into where you have come from and what actually meditation can mean in a more modern sense.
You know, meditation is a form of mindfulness. There are a lot of different types of meditation. In a lot of religious contexts, when they say meditation, they just mean to think about something religious versus meditation as a skill, as a practice, as an experience. And I'll use the word mindfulness more than meditation because mindfulness is really what people are looking for, whether that's achieved through a practice of sitting meditation, yoga, something Tai Chi or Qigong. There's lots of different techniques that you can get to that mindful state. Sitting meditation is one of them, but there's certainly a lot of other approaches to get to that experiential state of mindfulness.
Address the confusion in my mind sometimes when I think about that. I have to see this in terms of a religious connection, like the time that you were formerly involved with the Ecumenical Buddhist Society. A lot of times people think about meditation strictly in religious terms. Is that something that was very commonly held, at least it was in my mind, is that something that was a common thought that not necessarily is what is now?
That's one of the reasons perhaps I and the courses that I teach through the Curatio Mindfulness Project focus on the word mindfulness as opposed to meditation to help kind of clarify that distinction. Because many of the techniques that are used to reach a state of mindfulness have been taught in a lot of different religious traditions over thousands of years. And the techniques were very similar in these different traditions, but they were taught with a different vocabulary depending on what the religion was that they were taught in. And so the genius of mindfulness-based stress reduction and some of the other programs that I teach is that the techniques and the skills, because these are really psychological skills, were taken out of the religious context, taken out of the religious vocabulary, and are taught in common sense terms that are acceptable to anybody, regardless of what their spiritual or religious approach is, or whether they have a spiritual or religious approach. That's the genius of some of these programs that I teach, is they make it available to a much wider audience or group of people. These are essentially psychological skills as opposed to a religion.
Was there a time in history, let's say, was it like in the early 90s or the 80s or 70s, whenever it was, that the mindfulness began to become the focus in addition to those who find it meditation in a religious sense? When did it begin to separate?
You know, and that's a good point. Mindfulness-based stress reduction was begun probably about that time period at the University of Massachusetts School of Medicine. they started teaching mindfulness in the basement of one of the buildings. And basically, they gave them all the patients that they couldn't do anything with. People who were not responding to traditional medical interventions, regardless of what their condition was, they sent them down and they taught them mindfulness. And they taught it as a psychological skill in a non-religious, secular framework. And lo and behold, folks got better. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the births of what's called complementary and alternative medical treatments. When I teach mindfulness-based stress reduction and mindfulness-based relapse prevention, you know, half the people that come are referred by physicians, psychotherapists, psychotherapists. They have a physical condition such as high blood pressure, anxiety, fibromyalgia. People in the medical professions know that this type course will help them with their medical condition. For instance, some people come in and they take this 8-week course and they're able to reduce their medication level by using the skills that I teach in conjunction with their medical care. And I talk about a formal mindfulness practice, like I said, sitting meditation, yoga, Qigong, things like that. But I also say the purpose of meditation is not to meditate. The purpose of meditation is to develop that habit or skill of mindfulness and then to get up and go out into the world where it does you some good.
Well, let me back you up. You said that the purpose of meditation is not to meditate. Expand that just a little bit, because okay. It sounds kind of strange to say the purpose of meditation is not to meditate. What do you mean by not meditating?
People come to my courses because they're stressed out, they have health problems, they have addictions, and those things are not generally a problem when you're sitting on a meditation cushion, okay? And so that's the relationship between a formal mindfulness practice, such as sitting meditation, and being mindful in everyday life. And so what I'm really trying to say is you sit and do formal meditation practice so that you can take that habit of mindfulness out into your daily life with you, where it helps you deal with the stress of everyday life and helps you deal with your triggers to addictions and helps you in a very practical day-to-day level. You need the formal practice of meditation or a formal mindfulness practice like yoga, sitting meditation, Qigong, to kind of, I call it, build your mindfulness muscles so you can take it out into your daily life. Because that's where the benefit is in your daily life. And that's not to say that there's no benefit to sitting meditation, because there is. In terms of people coming to courses with life problems, with stress, with high blood pressure, the low back pain, addictions to drugs, alcohol, nicotine, food, the benefit is taking the skill of mindfulness into everyday life where they experience those stresses, and it helps them respond to those stresses in a different, more adaptive way. Mm-hmm.
Since we tend to try and stay focused a little bit on the effect or the impact of all these things have on our different age groups, older, middle, and younger, when you look over the group of people who comes to see you, do older people come with a different set of inabilities to be mindful or meditate compared to those who are in the middle age group compared to younger people? How do the different age groups, how are they impacted by meditation and mindfulness?
I have people anywhere from their 20s to their 80s in the class. Most of the people probably are in their upper 30s to 50s, but I have had them the whole range. One of the differences is people who are older have been unmindful longer. They've developed that habit of not being mindful. They've developed the bad habit of being unmindful for longer. So in some ways, it may be more difficult for them to develop the habit of mindfulness. But not necessarily, because the people in the course come in with so many different conditions. Some of them have neurological conditions, fused vertebrae. And sometimes older folks, like you mentioned, they have this view of meditation, and so they may be more resistant to it, whereas younger people may be more open to it. One of the questions you had was about technology, and that's one thing that I do see as a difference between the ages. You know, I teach mindfulness in an 8-week course. There are a lot of YouTube and computer internet sources for learning mindfulness, and I think the younger generation is more open to learning mindfulness just because they're more open to that technology, to older people. And sometimes older people are more comfortable with a classroom situation with a teacher face-to-face, and young people may be more amenable to an internet approach to learning mindfulness.
Does the word meditation, is it seen differently by the older, middle, and younger people? When you say the younger people are tuned into YouTube, are they looking at a different definition through the word mindfulness compared to using the word meditation?
There are so many different misconceptions and conceptions of both meditation and mindfulness out there. It's hard for me to make any generalizations about that.
I think that's one of the reasons why when the topic came to my mind to do was just what you just said. It seems to be a shotgun word used that really doesn't define some of the things that you're talking about in mindfulness. You mentioned yoga and tai chi, and what was the other one?
Qigong.
Okay, what's the specific difference between all those three compared to what that other shotgun effect of the word meditation is?
The thing that's common to it is present moment experience and a body-focused experience as opposed to a mental or thinking about. So, for instance, in sitting meditation, you have a focus on following the breath. A lot of mindfulness is going from a conceptual internal dialogue approach to getting in touch with body-based awareness and the wisdom that's in your body. There's a lot of wisdom in our bodies that we typically ignore. And so a lot of mindfulness is, and I'm getting off the subject of the question, I'll come back to that in a little bit, but, you know, there's information, there's wisdom in our bodies, and the thing that's central in all of those techniques is just being present-centered and being focused on a bodily awareness as opposed to, you know, the internal dialogue or self-talk that most of us go through the day with. Yoga, there's a little, you know, there's more of a focus on the postures. In the yoga that I do in my classes, it's pretty different from yoga in a traditional yoga class because it's more focused on the awareness of the body as opposed to the postures. Tai Chi is a type of Tai Chi and Qigong are all moving, and there's very, you know, you're rarely still. It's all moving. So there's some subtle differences in the different styles and types of formal meditation. The thing that's common is that body-based approach and the lack of an internal dialogue and to get out of that constant back-and-forth discussions that we have with ourselves that, you know, they're necessary some of the time, but when that's the world you live in and you kind of ignore your body-based experience, that's when stress, you know, tends to come up.
That leads me to the question about time frames, and I'm thinking about in the 50s or so when I was growing up in the 60s, 70s, compared to people who are growing up now in the younger generation, say they're in the high school age probably, where they begin to feel the stresses of this modern time and the voices and all those chatter in your mind you're talking about, was there a period in time when it would have been easier to talk about mindfulness than it is now?
I think there's a growing awareness of the need for mindfulness. People are realizing that our modern life is so highly stressful. We're in these situations where we, you know, there's a lot of talk about the fight and flight reaction, and people are reacting to situations, activating the sympathetic nervous system and firing off stress hormones and epinephrine, all sorts of neurotransmitters. and creating that stress reaction about not being able to pay their bill. There's an awareness in the culture of getting back to a simpler approach to life, developing mindfulness as a way to deal with those stresses, regardless of how old they are.
When does somebody who is very stressful, given their age, let's say middle or older, even younger people, when do they recognize they need to do something in mindfulness? How stressful do they have to become before they think that this is something necessary?
That's a widely varied thing. For instance, some people, they go to the doctor and the doctor starts talking to them about their high blood pressure and their heart condition, and that's their, quote, wake-up call that they need to do something. And certainly there are medical approaches to deal with those, but also they come, okay, well, I need to change some of my habits and mindfulness's approach. Another wake-up call is people get stressed and they can either internalize that stress and their body reacts and, you know, they have high blood pressure, heart trouble, irritable bowel syndrome, you know, all sorts of health issues, or they can externalize that stress, and, you know, that's where the addictive behaviors come in, drugs, alcohol, food, tobacco, video stimulation. Video stimulation is a really mixed bag as far as, so there's a lot of different wake-up calls where people say, okay, I need to do something different. That's where these courses I teach offer. It's a skill. It's retraining your mind. It's developing a positive habit of mindfulness to replace the stressful habits that most of us carry through our lives.
Well, let me ask you about young people specifically, in their early teens maybe, and all this technology you're talking about and video stuff. Can you see your child heavily involved in video events and still see that they could be mindful? It just seems like they're mutually exclusive, that the high video usage, even TV watching, doesn't allow you to be able to be mindful.
That's an interesting question, because there are video applications that you can use to teach mindfulness, but obviously a lot of the video out there, it's a sort of addictive behavior. Television can be an addictive behavior. You're watching TV, but you're not really watching it. The TV's on, it's there, but you're yelling at the kids and you're smoking a cigarette, and you're paying the bills all at the same time, okay? As opposed to there are video applications where you come in and you're totally focused on this one video task, and it helps you develop mindfulness. It's like most everything else, it can, how you do it determines a lot about whether it's helpful or not.
So is there a basic definition of the word mindfulness that may be different than what most of us would think? What does mindfulness really mean?
Yeah, well, and that's one thing. Some people try to represent mindfulness as kind of a unitary skill, and mindfulness is really a group of skills that are kind of, it's a big umbrella of skills.
What kind of skills are involved?
You're talking about, one, attention, being able to focus, but it's also your ability to regulate your emotions. Once you develop the habit of mindfulness, you increase your ability to regulate your emotions. You have less of a me focus, okay? And that's one of the things about the developmental stages of mindfulness, but you're not as self-centered, and hence you release some of that worry because you're not so identified with your experience. And in mindfulness, we tend to talk about getting out of the automatic reaction and getting into responding, so that if you become mindful, you use that information, that wisdom of the body. You said, okay, I can feel my hand clasping, I can feel my gut tensing, I'm getting stressed out. You're aware of these cues, and then that helps you get out of your automatic reaction to stress, to yell at your child or your employees or whatever, and make a more adaptive response. Being able to regulate your attention, being able to modulate your emotions. There's an explosion of mindfulness in the workplace. Again, that's another area in terms of you talking about it coming out of the religious context,
yeah,
is a lot of businesses are recognizing the benefits to their employees and the benefits to their bottom line when their employees are mindful. You see a lot of that of Fortune 500 companies teaching mindfulness, both because it helps the productivity of their employees, and you also see workplace wellness programs using mindfulness because it lowers their healthcare cost. So mindfulness has a lot of bottom line dollar and cents benefits.
The word mindfulness has been pretty well disguised from the common conversation, I should say, I guess I'd use that word, within the businesses. I don't hear people in HR talking too much about being mindful, although that's what you're saying, that they're wanting you to, how are they disguising mindfulness so that we don't know we're being mindful? I guess what I'm really saying is if you use the word mindful, there probably are some people who would say, well, that's a gimmick of this, that, or the other that is quasi-religious or fits into those areas that you don't really want it to fit into. So how do you get mindfulness to help the kids in school or to help people at work or older people as they're dealing with age problems? How do they know what mindfulness is? Where can they go?
You know, there's just an explosion of it going on, and there's an explosion of it going on in education right now. In my last class, I had an elementary teacher who was taking the course, and she was beginning to teach mindfulness to the students in her elementary class. As usual, you know, here in the Midwest, we're a little behind maybe things that are happening on the East Coast and West Coast, but it's starting to happen here in the Midwest as well. So my website is Curatio, Curatio, mindfulness.com. And, you know, there's some links on there that you can get to, you know, mindfulness in medicine, mindfulness in business, mindfulness in education. It really is beginning to explode. And
well, I'm sure that many of the people listening to our program today, when I mentioned the word meditation, that's where I got stuck and never even gave the thought of the word mindfulness associated or needing to be associated with meditation. I just saw them as different things. I'm glad to hear you say this about what you're seeing that coming in the form of kids at school, even with a teacher who can recognize this. Is meditation or mindfulness, as we're using the word here today, is it being accepted in our society? Here we are where we live, but in the East and the West, North and South, is there a particular part of the country that is far more involved in mindfulness than we are?
As in a lot of things, it's more prevalent on the East Coast and the West Coast than it is in Arkansas. But that's the genius of the programs that I teach. It's mindfulness-based stress reduction. It's taught on a psychological level. And so I recently did a workplace mindfulness program where, rather than my programs where people come to me and I advertise, you know, I went into this business and taught an abbreviated mindfulness program to the employees in the business. Every member of the class was either a fundamentalist Christian or a devout Muslim. They could take it in because it's taught in a secular psychological skill approach as opposed to a religious approach. That's really the genius of the program. They've changed the language that is used. They've added some modern science to some techniques and skills that have been taught for thousands of years and reframed it in a way that it's available to anyone.
What's the resistance to this? If I'm a person that hears what you're saying today and I really think that it's counter to what I believe, is there resistance to mindfulness?
Everybody's different. People have to get to a point where their problem, whether it's low back pain or high blood pressure or anxiety, addiction to drugs, alcohol, whatever, is greater than their resistance. I have people come and said, I've tried everything else. I'm at the end of my ropes. So some people come because they've been referred by a physician and said, yes, you're on this medication. Go take this course and it will work with the medication and you may be able to reduce your medication. Some people come because, you know, they read it in the paper. It looks good to them. They're 8 weeks long and they're homework intensive. And that's what makes them work. people come to class for two and a half hours a week for 8 weeks, and you need the classwork, but the real skill development is in the homework. They have 30 to 45 minutes of homework per night for 8 weeks, and that's where they really develop the skills of mindfulness. They come to class and ask questions and see, hear other people's questions, and they're able to get feedback from an instructor. That homework, that day-to-day mindfulness, is how the skills are developed.
How available is that to the people in our part of the world right here in central Arkansas? In other words, are there several different people who do the same sort of thing that you're doing here, or is it so rare that you're a rather rare offering to people?
I'm the only person that I know of in Arkansas that teaches mindfulness-based relapse prevention, which is the application of these principles to addictions. I know as far as mindfulness-based stress reduction, that's, you know, it's the oldest of the programs. It's been around forever. I lived in Little Rock for the last 28 years, and I've recently moved to Hot Springs. But I'm still teaching the courses here in Little Rock, but I've also started teaching the courses in Hot Springs because I live there now. There's a person up in Searcy that has taught courses in the... I've heard that there's somebody in Fayetteville that has taught classes. You know, there's also getting online. If somebody gets interested and they've got the motivation, and people can get online. And there's different avenues of learning meditation and mindfulness. And you know, this is just the one that I have come to be associated with and really believe.
And what's it called?
It's called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, and it's developed at the University of Massachusetts School of Medicine. The other course is Mindfulness-Based Relapse Prevention, which was developed at the University of Washington in Seattle. There's a lot of overlap between the two courses, but...
Are counselors in the various municipalities around here that deal with people who have to do, who are having problems with drugs, are counselors aware of this as a tool?
They're much more aware of mindfulness-based stress reduction, and a lot of the referrals I get are from mental health professionals. Psychiatrists, social workers, psychologists all refer a lot of their patients to my mindfulness-based stress reduction course. I'm in the process of educating people, so to speak, about mindfulness-based relapse prevention.
Well, that sounds like a very necessary course to be able to have access to. And the reason I say that is I know that I listen to the news, as everybody else seems to listen to the news, and we hear all this information about drug addiction. We hear about drug-related crime, drug this, drug that, people who are taking medications for whatever their ailment might be that are taking more and more and more medication. And instead of having a counselor, is there a counselor available to those kind of people who says, why don't you try this?
I'm educating the public about that. There's other techniques that have part of this approach that are out there. I think dialectical behavior therapy is a form of psychotherapy that uses a lot of mindfulness techniques, as opposed to my courses, which are not psychotherapy. I mean, they're just skill-based courses. So therapists who are doing a type of therapy that focuses on awareness often refer their patients or clients to these courses because they learn the skills that allow them to have a better benefit from the therapy that the therapist is offering.
Well, I'd like for you, if you could, to speak to three people in our audience. And one is a young person who is involved heavily in technology, or they're just swept up with all this high-tech stuff in their life, and they're just overwhelmed by it. And then also a middle-aged person who's going through all the job-related problems of keeping their family going and the stress is there. And then that maybe that older person who has gone through life and dealt with a lot, and they're really troubled by whatever it is, or maybe they're on a lot of medications. Can you speak to those three people? Is to say, when you get to a certain point, when should you check the website, or when should you get a hold of somebody like yourself? What's the alarm that needs to sound in those lives that maybe this is something they should do?
The first thing I would say to all of them is when they hear us talking about it and all these questions, to pay attention to their bodies and what is their bodily reaction, because that's what these courses teach you to do, is to access the wisdom of your body. And so if you hear this and your body goes, then maybe that's a clue that it's something you should check out. And like I said, people are so different. There's so many different things that bring them in. But just so for the young person, I'd say this is one form of learning mindfulness, but it's not the only one. And I want people to find mindfulness and the benefits that it brings, whether they take my courses or learn them someplace else. So especially somebody who's more technology oriented, they can Google, they can go to YouTube, and also, you know, they can get a little taste of it and then decide if they want more. For the middle-aged person, it's hard out there. The economy's struggling. They've got kids. They maybe got parents at the same time. You know, they got relationship issues. They may have health issues. If everything's perfect and they're happy as a pig in slop, then, you know, maybe not. But, you know, that's the other thing. You don't have to be sick to get better.
Yeah.
Okay? But these are very practical skills that can help regardless of where a person is on their distress or disease continuum. With the older folks is just finding what you need. One of the things I really enjoy teaching in the course is to learn to laugh at yourself. In terms of stress, when you ask people, well, what causes your stress? And they'll mention their spouse, their children, their job, etc. But the reality is most of us are our biggest stressor. We're the ones that put our pressure on ourselves. I love to give quotes. One of my favorite quotes is, we have met the enemy and he is us, mm-hmm. from Pogo. And so one of the most important skills taught in the course is learning self-nurture and to learn to laugh at yourself. That goes a long way towards reducing the stress that we put on ourselves. The courses are fun. And so I'm always teaching in the fall, and I usually teach one or the other. You know, this fall I'm teaching MBSR and I'm teaching this stress course and the addictions course in Little Rock, and I'm teaching the stress course in Hot Springs. And then like the spring, I'll probably teach the addiction course in Hot Springs, and I'm not sure what I'll mm-hmm. do in Little Rock.
So you mentioned earlier that you could Google mindfulness or you could Google the different things that have to do with this. You have your website. What is your website again?
It's www.curatiomindfulness.com, and curatio is curatio mindfulness.com. As I said, I've got three courses starting in Little Rock at either the end of September or the beginning of October. And so if they're interested, get online, call me, email me, get more information.
Is your email and stuff available on your website?
On the website.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing, you know, the courses are not cheap, but there's also scholarships available. So if people have financial issues, don't let mm-hmm. that stop you from contacting me and having a discussion.
And also you mentioned earlier, too, that there's some possibly in Fayetteville and some maybe in some of these surrounding areas, wherever you might be listening in our audience, which is almost statewide. If Little Rock is too far for you, you might want to check what's available through your area there. Where could somebody call to see if there's a course available or something available for counseling in that area in other parts of the state here?
Well, if you go to my website, and you go to the links, there's a link to the Center for Mindfulness and Medicine Society and Healthcare at the University of Boston. And if you get on their website, they have a list of all the MBSR teachers in the country, including Arkansas.
Okay.
So, you know, if you get on their website, they'll have a locate a course. And then they'll go to Arkansas, and then so they can find the other courses and availability in Arkansas.
Yeah. Okay. I guess one of the other questions I want to ask you is the medical field accepting of mindfulness as a therapy?
This was developed at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. A lot more medical professionals are becoming aware of this. There's an explosion of research on it. And so not all medical professionals are, but more and more there's general practitioners, psychiatrists, internal medicine physicians are recognizing the benefits. They're reading in their journals the benefits of these programs and making referrals. Again, it's just like anything else. Not everybody's aware of it, but many, many more traditional medical practitioners are becoming aware of the benefits and referring people.
It sounds kind of weird to say, but the topic of meditation, which is thousands of years old in terms of people who've used meditation in different types, we seem to be at the cutting edge of a new form of meditation in the form of mindfulness that is yet to be really popular or more pronounced. Am I right?
Right. And more available to the general public. And like I said, some benefit to mindfulness on a cushion, but the main benefit is when you take mindfulness out in your day-to-day life. And that's what I stress, is teaching practical skills that people can integrate into everyday life. And one of my biggest examples is teaching walking meditation, because so many people, oh, I don't have time to meditate. But everybody drives someplace, and then they walk into a building to do something. You can use that time walking as a mindful practice, a time to focus and nurture yourself in the present moment. Or you can use that time to rage about the driver on the street, or to anticipate what's going to happen when you get in the building. And that's the genius of mindfulness, is integrating it into everyday life and receiving the benefits of it, so it helps you day to day.
So whether you're a kid going to school, or you're a person going to work to see the boss, or you're an older person who has to deal with your grandkids, you could be mindful.
That's correct. It's always available to you. It's simply a choice of choosing to do it.
Well, we've been talking about what I started to say was meditation, but we have moved from what I had thought was the more connection to the religious part of meditation into what I think we were talking about, mindfulness as a secular aspect of physical well-being. I hope you've enjoyed listening to our program today. My guest here in the studio has been George Crook. His website is, say it again?
Curatio, C-U-R-A-T-I-O, mindfulness.com. And curatio is Latin for to heal or cure.
Well, that's where you can find George Crook's website, which would also lead you, as he mentioned earlier, to other aspects about understanding what the word mindfulness means. Anyway, George, thanks so much for being with me here today on the program.
Thank you for the opportunity, Phil.
I'll have the link to his website on our website up when you go to KUIR.org or YTTShow.org. You'll find this particular program, and I'll have the website information there too. So again, thanks for listening today, and we'll see you next time. Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of KUAR Public Radio, Little Rock.